Today's episode concerns the allegation of Monroe, Ohio police officer Kenneth Parson, who stutters, that he has been treated poorly because of his stuttering, and that his police department should accommodate his stuttering by transferring him from his road patrol assignment to a permanent detective position. Stutter Talk invited the Monroe, Ohio Police Department to have a representative appear on the program, and they declined. However, the city of Monroe did answer some questions. In a few days, Stutter Talk will post a companion episode to this one, in which we speak with a police officer who stutters to get his feedback and commentary on this situation. So check back at stuttertalk.com for more on this story. Hey everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering one podcast at a time. As always, starting the show off with some good voluntary stuttering. I'm your host, Peter Reitzis, here with Officer Kenneth Parson and his attorney, John J. Skatia. Did I say your name correctly, John?
Yes, you did.
Great. Well, welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Ken, I know that you've been in the news recently. A few people have contacted Stutter Talk because you're dealing with an issue pertaining to stuttering and being a police officer. But before we even get into that, can you tell the Stutter Talk listeners a little bit about your history with stuttering, when you started stuttering, if you've done any speech therapy?
Sure. I have stuttered all my life, as far at least as I can recall. In terms of speech therapy, I did a lot of it as a kid growing up. Didn't help too much. As an adult, as my speech became worse, I started to go back to speech therapy, also without any good result. My speech continued to get worse. So in 2009, I went to the Hollins Communication Research Institute in Virginia. And that's an intensive two-week course dealing with nothing but speech therapy. But of course, as you can tell, I wasn't able to gain reliable fluency based upon that.
I like that term, reliable fluency. That's really great. We've actually had Dr. Ronald Webster on Stutter Talk a few times from the Hollins Institute. Well, let's turn to you, John. We know that Officer Parson is a police officer in Monroe, Ohio. Could you give us the broad strokes of the situation he's dealing with now before we get into the specifics?
Yes, certainly. And Ken can deal with some of this a little bit better than I can. But initially, I don't believe that anyone knew the scope and extent of Ken's problem. And he was able, from talking with him and talking with other people, I learned, he was able to fairly well mask his speech impediment. What ended up happening was he got transferred over to the detective section around the same time he started having more difficulty with his speech. And the reaction from the folks in his command staff was that there must be something else wrong with Ken, and put him through somewhat of a grist mill. Forced him to go to a psychologist to determine whether he was competent emotionally to be able to do police practice, and when that came back that yes, he was, but he should not be on the streets, they sat back for a little bit and suggested he go, well, ordered him to go to speech therapy, although Ken was in the process of doing that. And the upshot of everything, when he did not improve to the level that they felt was appropriate, they started picking on him. And this is where I came in with Ken, what, it was about 2 years ago, Ken?
Yes.
And they were basically looking at small variations and small discrepancies in other behaviors to magnify in an effort to try to reprimand him and create problems for him in his employment. And I stepped in. Fortunately, we got matters settled down. And then early this year, the latest incident occurred where they were intent and let him know that they were going to send him back out onto the streets. Now, the problem with the streets from his doctor's perspective and mine, I've been involved in police practice on both sides of the fence since, gosh, 1982. On the streets, you have to have more of a command presence about yourself. You have to be able to rapidly respond verbally in terms of both a verbal command presence and also be able to call for help and assistance and warning to those around you and to the suspect who they may get shot. That being said, the ability to do that for Ken is diminished on the streets. Flip side of the coin is where Ken was at as a detective, those skills aren't that necessarily important, and that there are other mechanisms to do what a detective does well.
In a letter to Attorney Scaccia dated June 1st, 2011, the city manager of Monroe, Ohio wrote, quote, "Detectives have the same essential job duties as patrol officers," end quote, and goes on to write, quote, "If anything, the detective assignment requires greater duties, including the ability to engage in lengthy interviews, in addition to maintaining a close familiarity with patrol operations," end quote.
In this particular instance, Ken developed his speech impediment as a asset rather than a disability, and became one of the best, if not the best, in doing undercover white-collar crime and other investigations, including a murder investigation recently, where he was able to use his impediment both to disarm an individual emotionally and be able to get confessions, to be able to be in the right place at the right time in order for people to open up in a more undercover role. And he really did an excellent job. Got a lot of headlines for getting some really big busts, and Ken can talk about that. So for me, from an attorney standpoint, it was truly amazing and saddening that you take a person who is in an accommodated position, who excelled at it, and who used their disability, if that's what you want to call it, as an asset rather than as a liability, and he essentially was punished for it and moved into a position that could create danger for himself and others. And I believe it was done in a way and for a purpose to try to intimidate him and maybe embarrass him out of the force.
Stutter Talk would like to take this opportunity to remind listeners that it is possible that the Monroe, Ohio Police Department would dispute some of what Mr. Scaccia has said. The city of Monroe has provided Officer Parson with an accommodation, what some may refer to as a slight accommodation. In a letter written to Mr. Scaccia, dated June 1st, 2011, the city manager of Monroe wrote, quote, "As you know, upon the end of Officer Parson's temporary detective assignment, Officer Parson was to begin working as a road patrol officer on third shift. Third shift officers frequently have to deal with a higher volume of more dangerous situations, such as domestic violence calls. The city will instead place Officer Parson on first shift patrol officer rotation, which does not historically have the same volume or type of dangerous call situations." The letter goes on to say, quote, "The city hopes he will continue to be successful in this capacity with this accommodation," end quote. Just taking a step back for a moment, Ken, when you, if I understand correctly, when you started in Monroe as a police officer, you were on road patrol, and most people didn't know you stuttered. You did a pretty good job of either dealing with it or concealing it. Is that about right?
That is right. Actually, and as I grew up with this, I learned a lot of different tricks that I would use in order to hide it. One trick I would use is I would take strategic pauses and make it seem as if I'm trying to think of what I want to say, when in actuality I quit speaking because I couldn't at that moment. So I would pause, get more control of my speech, and then continue speaking. Another thing I would do is, if I know right before I'm going to say a word that I'm not going to be able to get the sounds out, I would, if I could, exchange that word with a synonym and try to hide it that way. The real issue that I had as I've gotten older is that my old tricks stopped working.
Yeah.
And I was no longer able to hide my speech. And it's gotten to the point where I don't have control over when I'm able to be fluent or not.
So if I understand correctly, your stuttering became more obvious, or you were less able to hide it when you were a detective. Is that right?
It occurred at about at roughly the same time.
Okay.
I would say that my speech had gotten worse gradually, but it was about that time where, as I said, all of my old tricks quit working.
And you were actually, let's just remind everyone, this is Stutter Talk. Peter Wright is here with Officer Kenneth Parson from the Monroe, Ohio Police Department, and his attorney, John J. Scacia.
At this point in the conversation, Officer Parson was asked to discuss his role and some of his experiences while on detective assignment.
In general, I mean, other detectives would ask me to do their suspect interviews on their cases, and the reason they would is because that I had a track record of being able to get a confession. And generally speaking, when a bad guy sits down with a detective, he or she already has in their mind how they're going to play this, what they're going to say, what their answers are going to be. They have their whole game plan in place by the time their butt hits the seat. And then I sit down, and the first major disfluency that I have comes as a surprise to them, and it kind of makes them toss their whole game plan out of the window, and kind of makes them think on the fly. But more specifically, I had a case about a year ago of a 35-year-old couple and their 20-some-year-old friend molesting a 12-year-old girl. I had all of those three people arrested and interviewed them one by one, and they would have had to have assumed at some point that this would actually come out, and that they might, you know, be talking to the detective. And I interviewed them, as I said, one by one. And at the end of each interview, I had a full written confession from each of them, all in one night, back to back. And one of the reasons I was able to is that when they heard my disfluency, it kind of jostled them a little bit and kind of made them go off script, so to speak. So I was able to get, again, three written confessions, and all three of those child molesters are now in jail. And I can tell you, I don't think there was a time until they were sentenced that they actually took me seriously. I mean, even when they wrote and signed all their confessions, we would go to court in the preliminary hearing, and I would be talking, and I would have disfluencies, and I could hear them, you know, kind of laughing at me, you know, to each other. Well, you know, which it's okay with me, because who is laughing now? They're, you know, in prison for an extended period of time. So, like John said, I have been able to use my disability as an asset and not a liability.
Ken, why don't you tell them about that big bus you had up north?
Sure. Well, we have in Monroe two flea markets, two very large open air flea markets, and a lot of the issues that we have there have to do with trademark counterfeiting, like fake Nike shoes or Coach purses, things like that. A couple of years ago, we did a bust down there, and one of the people that we busted was a Chinese national, and he didn't speak very fluent English, and, well, actually, neither do I, but based on my talk with him, and I was able to get him to do what most people in his spot won't do. Most people, like, for example, when I deal with Chinese nationals, they don't like to rat out their own kind. They don't like to talk about what other Chinese people are doing, but I was able to get him to give me information on who his supplier was. And based upon that, I went from my town in Monroe, which is in southwest Ohio, to Youngstown, which is in northeast Ohio. And when I was there, I raided and seized a warehouse full of $20 million worth of counterfeit goods. It was the largest bust of its kind in the history of the state of Ohio. And I received accommodations from Nike, Coach, Union Burke. All the brand owners sent the chief a letter expressing their thanks for all the work that I did. So I've had quite a bit of success in a number of different areas in detective work.
Well, you know, that story, and there's more, but I want to draw something out on this. This is not an individual who's saying, you know, I've got a disability, I've got a difference, give me a break. This is a guy who, because of his character, goes the extra mile, goes to the other end of the state in order to accomplish the goals that need to be accomplished and get the mission solved. And he does it not in spite of a handicap or a disability or a difference, but he does it by using that as a tool. Now, why in the name of God would anybody in America want to see this guy moved out to a situation where he's in the situation he is right now?
Well, there's a lot on the table. I really want to say to Officer Parson that I appreciate your service very much, and it really sounds like what you're saying is that you view your stuttering as an asset as a detective. And, you know, at Stutter Talk, we always talk about using our stuttering as an asset. And it sounds like, well, you see your stuttering as a very positive thing. And it also sounds like from the big bus you're talking about that you're a pretty darn good detective.
I am. And just, I mean, a quick Google search of my name and the words Monroe Police will come up with page after page of all the other cases and things that I have worked. So, I mean, I have gotten quite a bit of respect outside of the walls of the place where I work from various news agencies and businesses, prosecutors and judges, things like that.
Either one of you guys can answer these questions, or both of you can. John said that you've been reprimanded and that you've been picked on. Could you expand on that a little bit for us?
I would prefer that I do that a little bit, and maybe Ken can add some things. And the reason for that is to protect him.
Sure. Okay.
The matter I'm mostly concerned with right now, aside from the issues of potential danger occurring on the streets, is the opportunity that could be misused by forces that do not want to be enlightened to retaliate against Ken under pretext. And I prefer him not going through that. The incident in question involved a situation where Ken was required to or was told in a rather oblique fashion to show up to work in his uniform rather than his civilian clothes. Now, he hadn't worn his uniform in a number of years, and in that particular instance, the uniform didn't fit real well, so they gave him some problems about that. Then it was an issue with regards to having the right hat. Well, the detectives don't get a hat allowance because they don't wear hats. They, you know, except for maybe baseball caps undercover or something like that, but they don't wear your typical police hat. Well, in this particular instance, they had changed hats three times in 3 years at a cost of several hundred bucks a piece. At least, what was it, Ken? 100 or 200 bucks a piece?
Yeah.
Alright. Which kind of, you know, delves into the public servant's money quite a bit. On the other hand, road patrol officers got it paid for. So, the problems for Ken was they were escalating him in other areas in order to try to move him, to try to discipline him. I think there was one or two other matters as well that started to surface. And when I see these types of things in the job setting, and I work both sides of the fence, I both represent companies and also represent individuals, I have a tendency to be concerned about the fact that discrimination in this day and age has become exceptionally sophisticated. And folks are essentially obtaining opportunities, or looking for opportunities, and manufacturing opportunities to achieve a goal that is reprehensible.
So
that's what was happening with Ken.
Is it your belief that the department is discriminating against Ken because of his stuttering? That's why the transfer from detective back to road patrol occurred?
One of the stories that have filtered through to me through a variety of sources was efforts by his supervisors to attack his credibility as an officer. Now, this is a highly accommodated individual. He has been recognized both by the folks who he serves in the community and also recognized in the nature of the bust that he has accomplished as being a very, very accomplished detective. Yet supervisors were going around polling officers about, you guys don't think that he's a very good officer, do you? And you think he's a laughingstock, don't you? And things along that line, they're setting the stage up for a claim that Ken is not a respected officer. Well, you know, respect in a military organization usually comes from the top and works its way down.
And again, I'm going to ask Ken, but I understand, Mr. Skatia, if you have to answer. Ken, did you grieve any of this intimidation or discrimination or treatment that you received? Or I should say,
for Ken
alleged.
To refer to it as discipline that
okay.
was misguided.
Okay. And again, it's all alleged. So,
exactly.
Ken?
Yes, I did grieve the things that are discipline, but the things that I cannot grieve, which still affect me and my work and my future, are things like performance evaluations and things like that, which I don't have any grievance rights per se.
The other issue on grievance too, there are certain levels of discipline that can be imposed in which a individual in Ken's situation, officer on his force, does not have the ability to challenge because it's viewed as trivial. For or less significance. For example, certain types of written and oral reprimands. And Ken, I don't recall what is suspensions below a certain level grievable in your organization or not.
Yes, they are.
All suspensions.
Yes, sir. Any time there is a lost time discipline, we are able to.
So what you end up with. I'm sorry. What you end up with in situations then is a bunch of write-ups and a bunch of performance evaluations that, you know, you can put down maybe a little note and say, this isn't true, this isn't what happened, but it still sticks in your record for a significant period of time and does color your reputation, if you will.
So we really have at least two stories here, or two concerns here, is the treatment of Officer Parson in his department, and then also the transfer from detective back to road patrol. Let's leave the treatment stuff on the table for now and get into the transfer. If I have the facts correct, Officer Parson went from road patrol to a detective duty for approximately 4 years, and then was transferred back to road patrol. Is that correct?
Well, it wasn't exactly a complete, like one day, okay, wake up, you're going back to road patrol. I want to emphasize this because I think this is important, and it sets the stage for my opinions regarding the mindset here. You have an individual who they've had a previous evaluation from their doctor that says Ken should not be on road patrol because of the physical issues associated with his level of speech impediment and the response issues and that need to be taken care of. However, he can do other things well. Ken did things well. The point of it is when I got word of this, I started writing and trying to communicate with these guys. And we sent letters. There's a series of letters that went back and forth. And also, too, Ken went and voluntarily went to his doctor and asked his doctor for an evaluation. The doctor gave an evaluation. I sent it on to the chief of police with my comments and my concerns and followed it up after that. Unfortunately, the response to these letters wasn't to, like, seek more information or, oh, wow, we might be wrong. Let's take another look at this. Let's look at this in a more rational approach and try to do something that's appropriate. The response was to blame me for not getting things there quick enough and or to suggest that the doctor in question doesn't know what he's talking about because they felt that he's contradictory. What it basically came down to, anybody can make an argument on anything. The question is, will the argument hold water in this instance? I had said it before, and I say it again, I feel it's hogwash.
In a letter dated March 16, 2011, the city manager of Monroe, Ohio, asked Mr. Skatia to provide a medical opinion about the nature of Officer Parson's impairment and how it limits him, assessing whether Officer Parson can successfully perform the essential job requirements and stating what accommodations are necessary, if any. In a follow-up letter dated June 1, 2011, the City of Monroe states that Officer Parson did not respond to its request for a medical evaluation until 2 months later, and the police department claims that it was left with insufficient time to get Officer Parson evaluated by a physician chosen by the department.
One other thing I should mention, too. They have also stated that everybody gets transferred in 4 years. Ken's no exception. This is the rule. Two responses to that are this. Show me the others. So far, nobody's been able to show anybody any of the other information that verifies this is, in fact, what occurs. The other thing that I think is important is the fact that the issue of what they're doing and the fact that they may transfer somebody every 4 years doesn't take away from the fact that this is a reasonable accommodation that serves everybody well. And to move somebody in these economic times from a position in which they're excelling onto the street where they are not going to have the same degree of excellence and have some degree of risk, although I'm sure he's going to do well up to a certain point, and put somebody from the street who's never done detective work and say they expect them to excel in these economic times is a waste of resources.
Well, there's so much there I want to talk to you about.
In an email to Stutter Talk from the city manager of Monroe, Ohio, they explained their position. Quote, under Chief Homer, and after the retirement of some part-time officers that filled the role of detective in our small department, opportunity was given to every officer to gain experience on a 4-year term in the assignment of detective. Ken Parson accepted that opportunity in 2007 after being a road officer for over 6 years with the department. After fulfilling his 4-year term, another officer has been assigned to perform those duties and gain experience. We believe the ability to train officers in this manner will allow for improved skills of all officers in this small department. End quote.
Let's just remind everyone, Stutter Talk here with Officer Ken Parson and his attorney, John J. Scacia. You're saying that Ken was evaluated by a police department physician or at the request of the police department, and the department was told he should not go back to road patrol for safety reasons. Then why did they put him back in road patrol if their own people said not to?
Well, that does beg the answer, doesn't it? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, you know
and
what I'll
when,
do?
When I fo- I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's just I will actually send this as a question to the city manager and see if they will respond to that. It's just a curious situation from what you're saying.
Stutter Talk asked the city manager of Monroe, Ohio, a host of follow-up questions after recording this interview, but received no response.
If we can move to the 4-year point, that's actually a really interesting point, because I know a few police officers who stutter. So I contacted one of them before doing this show just to talk to him about some of the issues that might come up. And he made the point of saying that in many departments, including his own, detective positions are something that are shared, that people move in and out of. And he made the point that the core of any department is road patrol, and that in small departments, and he said, like, you know, Ken is in a small department, they want to give all of the officers an opportunity to have a job like a detective job. I mean, is that a reasonable thing for a department to want to do?
I have no problems with cross-training. I'm a firm believer, especially in small units and small areas, that people need to be able to multitask and step into other people's position when injury or events occurs that calls upon it, and that they be able to do it in a smooth fashion. That's not what's happening here. That's number one. Number two, the issue with road patrol, there's a lot of different things that an officer can do in a police department. Evidence technician, property room, and yes, road patrol. And Ken has done road patrol from time to time, even as a detective. However, the problem with Ken's level of stuttering is so pronounced at times that it could lend itself to an event that could be tragic at some point. And let me say this, on any given day, the odds of that happening are small. The question then becomes, though, why increase the risk at this particular time, and what's the advantage and what's the purpose behind the action? If this was truly an incident where the department had to make some decisions on use of scarce resources, there are other ways of handling this and still be able to make everybody in a situation that's positive with flexibility. In this particular instance, it's rigidness. And again, Ken is the only one that has been transferred in, I believe, the history of the department.
In an email to Stutter Talk from the city manager of Monroe, Ohio, the topic of special assignments was discussed. The city manager wrote, quote, "We do not have a policy per se. Every year we do shift bids, and the officers can request any special assignment that they are interested in doing." End quote.
The culture of the Monroe Department, from what you're saying then, is that a police officer becomes a detective and stays in that job until he or she retires or requests a transfer? Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. Well, that's the way it's been. And to make it even more interesting along those lines there, you know, recently Ken was supposed to participate in a bust. A lot of his work is white-collar crime associated with trademark infringement and fraudulent apparel and things along those lines there. And he's very good at it. Well, the bust was being planned. Someone else was supposed to be organizing it and have eight officers backing the bust. At the last minute, Ken was told he was doing it, and rather than having eight officers, it was just him and two guys going into a very large flea market type setting with the purpose of shutting down eight or nine vendors. Ken, with ingenuity, I might add, realizing that he was walking into a dangerous and hopeless situation under those circumstances, outnumbered and outgunned, called an auxiliary police officers, who were basically civilians who'd had some training, and used those folks to, as they went from station to station, after the vendor was secured, to maintain that security as they moved to the next vendor. And in true fashion of Ken, was able to accomplish quite a bit more with less. And had a pretty big bust out of the whole thing, from what I understand. It's that type of a mindset that really, really concerns me. We're not dealing here with a situation where there's layoffs. We're not dealing here with a situation where there has been a history of moving people from one position to another. We're not dealing with an officer who has not done a good job, and we're not dealing with an effort to cross-train and make everybody proficient in a number of areas.
I keep saying this, but I have to say it again. The situation that you're sharing is alleged. It's one side of the story. So, Ken, I promise I'm going to come back to you in just a moment, but I wanted to ask John one more question just so I can try to make this very clear for the listeners. The city manager, William Brock, I contacted that office for some documents, so I got a copy of the police contract, and he also sent me the original memo or the listing for the detective job, and it says that, and this is the first bullet point for the detective job, this temporary assignment will be for 4 years plus minus depending on the needs of the department. So that's their policy, but what it sounds like you're saying is that while they have policies, there's a culture of detective positions not really being 4 years. Is that correct?
Let me speak to it, and I'll let Ken speak for a second.
Okay.
We live in an age where discrimination and bad attitudes that go along with it have become exceptionally sophisticated. You have written policies or de jure policies, and then you have de facto policies, which is the way they act. And what these folks do who get into these types of situations, say, all right, we've got this policy, but we're not going to use it. It's in writing. We'll fall back on it. We don't discriminate against this or that. We don't, you know, engage in this type of harassment or that type of rabid harassment because we've got a written policy that says that. But then you have an underlying policy, which is really the policy of the culture. Mm-hmm. And that's the one that manifests itself with some degree of guardedness when under scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, when I came in to the job, there were three other detectives in the division. One spent 8 or 9 years in detectives, and then he got another job with the state of Ohio as an investigator. The other person was promoted to was a detective for, again, probably 8 or 9 years, and then he was promoted to lieutenant. And the last guy retired with 30 years of experience, almost all of it, or at least the last 25 years or so in the detectives division. Prior to that, and I could list other people, no one has ever been transferred out of the detective division in that way. The only way that a person would leave is if they left and got a new job, they retired, or they asked to do another kind of work, or they were promoted. So the kind of thing that is in that memo has never actually occurred in the history of the city of Monroe.
No, I'm sorry. Please finish.
No, that was just what I was just going to end with. I mean, that has never happened before. And if they would want to cross-train people, I mean, there are always multiple detective positions. So it isn't like I'm the only one and I'm locked in and no one else can ever get a chance. If they truly do want to rotate, they could. Like I said, I'm just one of a whole team of detectives.
So it sounds like what you guys are saying or suggesting is that the culture of the department may be different than the policies that they have in writing. Ken, do you think, I mean, is the nature of your disability, if I may call it that, if the nature of your stuttering, is it that you can't, can you ever imagine going back to road patrol? Is that something that you're working towards?
Unfortunately, I am currently on road patrol, and I don't feel like it's a place where if I'm in a certain situation, I know that I cannot count on my ability to speak when seconds count and lives could be at stake. So, of course, I would love if I didn't have this disability, but that just isn't the case. I don't think it's ever going to go away, no matter how much I work on it. So, I am already there on the road right now, and as I said, I don't feel as if I can perform that job safely.
So,
I'd like to put something out here because I think it's important. You know, first and foremost, this is not an effort, a fishing expedition to try to, you know, develop a case. The case is there. We've bent over backwards trying to avert anything other than Ken getting in a position where he ought to be, all things considered. The other thing of it is, and I think this is important, in the America as opposed to the rest of the world. We're supposed to be trying to get in situations where people can rise to the highest level, their hard work and efforts will take them, and put in, and their talents. Ken is an exceptionally creative individual who is able to use his disability, his speech impediment, his strike against him, and we all have strikes against us in our life, and get into and use it in a way that became an asset. He was able to do things with this that others weren't. Let's face it, if you are a bad guy, the last person you think is going to be the cop is the guy that stutters. And let's face it, our society and people in general have a tendency to be cruel with regards to folks who have speech impediments. Elmer Fudd in Bugs Bunny, you know, and other things, I mean, are not going to be well received in a situation. Ken is not going to be well received in a situation where he has somebody with that type of mentality, that type of mindset, who is a desperado of one sort or another, and he's going to say, I'm not listening to this guy. Look at the way he talks. It's going to be looked at as a sign of weakness. Sooner or later, it's going to happen. It may not happen tomorrow. It may be a year tomorrow. It may be 2 years from tomorrow. It may be tomorrow. We don't know.
So it sounds like,
the point of it is, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It sounds like what you're saying is, and I'm sympathetic to this on a personal level, is that that Ken's stuttering could put him in direct danger. At least it's possible.
But his stuttering can also put him into a situation where he gets the bus that the next guy doesn't.
Hmm.
Where he gets is able to use his undercover abilities to get the confession the next guy doesn't. Why? Because it's disarming.
Okay, so let's get
to use those tools. Use those tools in a way that everybody gets to use their differences in a way that becomes an asset and a talent. And that's what America is largely about. That's the direction we're trying to get into. Not to put people in pigeonholes and say, you can't do nothing, or you can only do what we feel like letting you to do. You're lucky to do something because you've got something different about you. That's wrong.
In a letter dated June 1st, 2011, to Mr. Skatia, the city manager of Monroe writes, quote, notably, the city is unable to offer Officer Parson a permanent job as a detective or evidence technician because doing so would pose an undue hardship on the city. In the same letter, the city manager of Monroe, Ohio writes, quote, the city of Monroe uses the temporary detective and evidence assignments to train its police officers. The goal is to rotate the assignments so that all officers can gain the experience and knowledge of these two important police officer functions. No officer has ever been hired to permanently serve as a detective or evidence technician, and Officer Parson was fully informed of the temporary nature of the assignment when he accepted it. To allow Officer Parson to serve permanently as a detective or evidence technician would be to fundamentally alter the nature and operations of the city's police department and to deny training opportunities to other officers. Moreover, both of these assignments still require the officer to serve as a patrol officer. End quote.
So it sounds like your position is that Ken is an effective detective and that a reasonable accommodation for him and his stuttering is to keep him in the role of a detective. Is that about right?
I think it's even a little bit broader than that because I don't feel that Ken, in the position he was in, was being given anything. They were getting more from Ken than they would have from just about any other officer before him.
Do you guys have time for a couple more questions?
Absolutely. Sure.
Okay. In preparing for this show, I was looking at other cases of disability and police officers and injury, and I heard about an interesting one. So, John, I'm going to put it to you to get your feedback. good police officer hurt on the job during a training exercise falls and hurts his neck. He goes on leave for about a year to heal, and when he comes back, he's in road patrol, and he says to his department that his neck hurts so much that he just can't sit in the car all day, and he requested a position walking, because there's several jobs in his force where he could spend most of the day walking a beat. And his department liked him, and they said to him, they discharged him on a medical discharge, and they said to him, you know, you as a police officer, you need to be able to do every duty of the job. So, John, and I know this is a tough question, but let me put that to you. Why is Officer Parson different, or why is this case different?
First of all, I think it's important that everybody be able to do any duty that there's assigned when they're able to. The question is this going to be standard duty all the time? And I'm going to fault that department. I don't know nothing about the case itself. But in the limited circumstances in which you rendered it, I think that that is a misuse of a police officer, because everybody has problems, and what they're encouraging there is people to be quiet about their problems. It doesn't sound like the officer couldn't do the job. It sounded like he was going to get hurt if he continued in the area he did. So they said, let's disability him out, let's get rid of the guy. The fact of the matter is, all police departments have life duty. All police departments that I've come in contact with, and like I said, I've seen it on both sides of the fence for years, has positions available within that department for people who get injured, people who get in trouble, people who get wrongly accused of something and they have to put them someplace, people who get rightly accused of something and they want to put them someplace because they're trying to cover the trail, so to speak, and give them a second chance. In this particular instance, we're not dealing with somebody who is saying, please move me. He's saying, you don't need to move me. I'm here. I've made the adjustment. I'm doing well. The law in this country says that in these types of circumstances, in these types of situations, those issues have to be given strong consideration in employment decisions. And if an employer is going to act with a motivating factor of wanting to have a discriminatory result, and again, it's a motivating factor, then that employer is going to be held accountable. Now, we have been bending over backwards trying to get the city of Monroe to do the right thing. And I still hope and pray that these folks wake up and tomorrow say, you know, we need to change ourselves. We had a bad attitude, or we didn't realize certain things. We need to turn it around. But there are other options that I can take. And I have no shyness about litigation.
Has your agency put anything in writing directly about your stuttering that would suggest that the transfer from detective back to road patrol was about your stuttering and is not just a management prerogative?
Well, I can say that I don't think that they have put anything in writing. I don't, and I'll let John talk a little bit more about that, but I think they know better than to do anything like that.
This is some of the sophisticated issues that we're talking about, but at the same time, just as the bad attitude guys have sophisticated approaches to things, folks on my side of the fence also are able to dig into it. Why would they go ahead and ask him and send him to a doctor to have him evaluate it when his speech became noticeable? And want to know whether or not this guy has a mental disability that made it difficult for him or impossible for him to do police work that he might go off, and then get a result back from the same doctors that they sent him to saying, this guy has got a problem, it is basically physical in nature, speech therapy may benefit him, but in the meantime, don't put him on road patrol, have him do other assignments. He then does other assignments for a while getting questionable actions taken against him. And then when that proves too frustrating, they turn around and put him in a position where their own doctors, and these were doctors that they sent Ken to. It was a doctor that Ken had no rights in terms of any privilege of doctor-patient relationship with. And that guy there comes back and says, don't do something. And then when your other avenues are not available, you go ahead and you do it anyway and say, oops, it's our prerogative. I can't help but to believe they knew darn well what they were doing and that they were very much aware. They did not have corporate amnesia or police amnesia in this particular instance.
But, you know, the one thing I will say, or maybe I'll share something, is that Ken and I sound like we have some similar histories with stuttering. And when my stuttering reached the boiling over point where I wasn't able to hide it anymore, there were some people in my life forever who I was close with who actually thought that there was something mentally wrong with me at the time because they had always known me as a fluent speaker or mostly fluent. And then one day, all of a sudden, I'm talking with stuttering. And, you know, I was told by a psychologist and that, you know, she was wondering about my mental stability. And I did have a girlfriend suggest that I was just trying to seek attention. So, I mean, on this, I don't know the way the department spoke to Ken about this, but I mean, on the surface, I do understand why somebody would wonder, you know, why is it that all of a sudden the stuttering is so pronounced, just because the general public really doesn't know much about stuttering. Having said all that, you know, again, I don't know the tone with which all of that was done or said.
Well, let me say this, too. I never have problems with people questioning if in the source of their question they're trying to get knowledge and understanding. That's human nature. There's nothing wrong with that. That's acceptable. That's appropriate. That's the American way. But when you get the answers, to disregard them because it's unsettling to some mindset of prejudice that you may have, or it requires you to internally re-examine yourself and come to grips with some of the problems that you yourself have in the begin with. And by you, I'm talking about the actor, not the recipient of the act. That's a different story.
Mm.
So, I mean, you know, I think... when you get the answer, don't try to change the answer because you don't like the result.
And I think that's a really important point that you keep making, and I just have to keep saying it's all alleged. All the points made today are alleged. Last big question, where do you guys go next? I mean, are the lines of communication still open with the Monroe Police Department and the city? Are you guys still talking? Is this going to end up in the courts?
Nobody's talking to us. I mean, my lines of communication are always open. I'm always willing to try. And where are we heading? I am not going to allow my client to continue to risk every day the prospect of running into deadly danger without starting to make some moves in the direction of protecting him. I don't feel that he should take a disability if he doesn't want one and doesn't feel that it's appropriate. That's wrong. We want people working in this country. That's what the American work ethic's all about. What I do am going to do is, in the very near future, if there is not some just demonstrable movement towards rationality, I am going to start the process, and the first step in that process is filing with the EEOC for discrimination in order to protect his administrative rights under federal law.
Hmm.
And I'm going to say this, too. This is not something, again, where I'm out trolling for cases. This is something I have bent over backwards repeatedly asking this department either to come up with some rational explanation or to make a rational move consistent with the safety issues of this officer and consistent with good police practices. They have consistently refused. They have disregarded their own doctors. They have disregarded their own experts. They have disregarded their own de facto policies. And seem to be presenting themselves in a way that says, we're going to do what we want to because we can, and the American people aren't going to figure it out. I think the American people are a lot more sophisticated than that, and I think they're kind of getting fed up with this type of government. Hopefully, these people who are running the show wake up someday very soon and say, you know, this isn't about whose is bigger. It's about being good leaders. It's about being right. we're going to adjust ourselves and we're going to make some changes internally within the department, internally within ourselves, and we're going to make a good decision with regards to Kent. If they don't do that, then perhaps the voters will someday make a choice. In the meantime, I have to do what I have to do to protect my client.
Well,
and real quick,
Ken,
if I could, in terms of you know, open lines of communication, I mean, I literally worked for years two offices down from the chief. And I met with the chief over the course of the last few months, kind of informally and off of the record, just asking and really just begging him not to, that I didn't want to go down this path. This is not anything that I want to have happen. I just feel as if I'm left with no other choice.
Hmm. Well, I hope that Ken, that you, Officer Parson, and John, and the city of Monroe can work something out so that everybody wins. Well, I want to thank you guys for joining us. This is Stutter Talk. I'm Peter Reitz. It's here with Officer Ken Parson and his attorney, John J. Scacia. And hopefully we'll be able to continue to follow the story here at Stutter Talk.
Stutter Talk contacted the Ohio Patrolmen's Benevolent Association, what some people refer to as the Police Officers Union, at both the state and local levels for comment on this story, but received no response. And just a reminder, in a few days, Stutter Talk will publish an episode with a police officer who stutters, who will provide expert commentary on this story. Please be sure to tune back in, because this follow-up conversation will be really interesting. Thanks for listening.